Mesechet Parah, Perek Sheni. So, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Parat Chatat HaMe'uberet, suppose you have a Parah Duma that got pregnant. So then it's kosher. Why? It's dragging around a child. So isn't that considered to be doing work? No, because we have a klal, which, again, that I remember even Gavi writing down, is Uber Yerech Imo. And since Uber is Yerech Imo, it's considered to be part of her organs. So the same way she's not considered to be doing work because of dragging around her stomach, she's not doing work because of dragging around her fetus. The Chachomi Poslim, they hold Uber Lav Yerech Imo, in which case she is carrying a Uber around, and that itself is considered to be an Aveda. Now, there's a bit of a problem here, because unless this Pura is Mother Mary herself, and I mean, they do name cows Mary, how did she get pregnant if she never carried anything? She needed to have a male mounter, and therefore, she would be anyway Nifsel, because as we'll see later on, a male is actually considered to be a burden, and it would pasul the Pura. So how did she get pregnant if she wasn't already pasul? That's the question. So we'll see later on that if the zachar was eila mi'atzma without the owner's rotzen, and we'll talk about the case more in detail later on, that then it would not be considered to be a malach. We're going to be medayik that from the lashonos of the pesukim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, you cannot buy a pora aduma from goyim. So eina nilkachat min hagoyim, because by goyim, it's pretty standard to have sex with animals, and therefore, we're chayshis that the para would have been nifsal, because where do we see that a para is nifselet from the dinim that would apply to karbonis? I mean, I know that we have a drasha that tells me that a nirva is posel by a karbon, but this is not a karbon. So this we understand, first of all, that since it compares a sex-used animal to a mum, because it says, ki mashchatam bayem, mum bom. And remember that hashchata we saw in the story of the Marble, hishchit ko basaret darko, is considered to be hashchata. So if they actually had been used for sex, it would be, the klal is, kol shahamum poselbo, Dvar erva, actually the full call is Dvar erva v'avodes kerchovim, because avodes kerchovim is also called hashkata. But here we're interested in this particular part. So if a mum passels, and it says beferish, asher ein ba mum, so there's no question that the mum passels. So if a mum passels, that would mean that actual sexual misuse would also passel. So because of that, we don't allow you, according to Rabbi Eliezer, we don't allow you to buy from goyim at all. Masha Enkein, the question is, the Chachamim, what do they hold? The Chachamim, they don't argue about the question of the standard use of animals for sex. They argue about whether a goy would take a chance at sleeping with his Parah Aduma because of the damage that would accrue to him, right? So they used to believe, I have no idea why, but they used to believe that an animal that was used for sex with humans would become sterile. So in order to avoid the costs, they wouldn't use animals for sex. And therefore, all of the korbanos, according to the Chachamim, not only lo zu bilvad, you might have thought that that's only because of the expense of a Parah Aduma. He wouldn't want to take a chance that the Parah Aduma would be ruined. But the truth is that kol korbanot ha-tzibur v'ayachid ba'in min ha'aretz u'michutz la'aretz, and there's no problem at all. Okay, that's one approach to the Mishnah. It's not the approach of Rishonim. It's the approach of the more recent Mefarshei HaMishnah. But the Pashtus is understanding lo zu bilvat. It's not only about the Parah Aduma that we have, the Machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer, the Chachamim, but it's all Korbanos HaTzibur Rabbi Eliezer pasuls if they were brought from Goyim, and the Chachamim our Makshirin, and we continue on now with a new issue not connected to this sex thing, but rather Boyin Mi Oretz or Michutzla Oretz and Min HaChodosh U Min HaYashan. It's all part of that same thing. The same way Menachas are brought Min HaChodosh Min HaYashan, or there's no problem except for the Omer and the Shtei Alechem, which of course need to be brought from Eretz Yisrael. And they also need to be brought from the Chodesh, because they're what's Matir Chodesh, the Omer from the Chodesh of the Seorim, and the Shtei Alechem of the Chodesh from the Chitim. So it says Beferish, it's the Mincha Chodesha, obviously. So everything can be brought even from Chutz Laretz, but not those things that the Torah was makbid on coming from Eretz Yisrael directly. You know, there is such an amazing Nekuda that this is Megala, which is that this whole insane modern idea about sexual deviation is so completely unfounded in terms of the Gemara. According to them, remember, we're always going to assume that a goy, if he's got an opportunity to go screw your animal, that's exactly what he's going to do. And I mean, oh my gosh, Kinsey reports that, you know, maybe 40% of people raised on farms engaged in bestiality. The same thing is true about every sexual so-called deviation. Chazal take for granted that that is standard practice among goyim. And the only way it's not standard practice is because Yisrael is careful in how it is that they act because of the mitzvahs Hashem. But this crazy idea that there are mental illnesses associated with sexual deviancy, there's absolutely no marker for at all. And Chazal never for a moment entertained that this was something that a normal person wouldn't do, which is so shockingly different than the modern appreciation. Okay. Anyway, I think it's such an important nekuda to see the difference of Chazal's approach. Ready now for Parah, Perek Beit, Mishnah Beit. A parah that has no black hairs and therefore has no problem with it being not tamima in terms of its admumiyut, but it has blackened horns, or it has blackened tlafayim, the hooves. So if there's shechorim, you should cut off the black part. But when it comes to the gagal ha'ayin, suppose it has black eyeballs, or shinayim, it's got black teeth, or its tongue is blackened, that's not a problem. That is eno posel bepora. Hananeset is kashera. Ananas, remember, is a dwarf, which is a pigam when it comes to a human. So that's considered to be one of the mumim in Bechoras. It passes a kohen, but it only passes the kohen. It's one of the examples of things that pass the Adam and don't pass the behema. So dwarfism is not a problem to pass the Pora Aduma. Suppose Haitaba Yabelet v'chatacha. Suppose it had like a wart, and you cut off the wart. So what is the din in terms of the kashrus of the parah? So Rabbi Yehuda says, so then it's possible. Rabbi Shimon says, if it didn't grow its red hair over that place, it's possible. Koma kom shenital v'loya lemekomo seyar adom, it's possible because basically you took away its tamimus of the atmimus. But if it had Sa'aradon, it would be kosher. Rabbi Yehuda holds, actually, that it's only possible because the hair that would grow in the place of where you cut a wart does not have the same level of admimus. And because of that, it's still considered to be a pagam in its admimus. That's how the Rishonim explain it, and actually, that's how we paskin. Perek Beis Mishnah Gimel. A yotze dofen. So now we're talking about a parah that was not born vaginally, but was born by Caesarean section. So the question is that considered to be a kosher animal for a parah? How about if a parah is given as an etnan for a zona, or a parah is given in exchange for a dog? Do the dinim of kachim, which is kitelaid, and lo taviet man zonah mechir kelev. Do those dinim apply also to a parah aduma, or are they only dinim in kachin? So the Tanakama holds they're dinim that apply across the board. Why? After all, the parah aduma is not kachay mizbeach. The parah aduma is kachay berek habayit. So why would we apply dinim that have to do with the psul haguf to the mizbeach? How in the world would we be justified in applying such a halacha to kachay berek habayit? The basis of it is the fact that the Torah says chatati, so it gives it as if it's a chatas. That's why we keep calling it paras chatas, me chatas. We keep referring to it to remind us that it has these chumras, that it is similar to a real chatas. Rebbe Eliezer says, wait a minute, when it comes to esnan u'mechir, it does not apply to a parah, because there it says beferish in the pasuk lo tavi etnan zona umechir kelev beit Hashem Elokecha. It says beferish, don't bring it into the bayit. The parah isn't brought into the bayit, and therefore, how could it apply to a parah? Which means that even though it's called a chatas, but nonetheless, for when it comes to the dinim of etnan umechir, it would be kosher. That's how Rebbe Eliezer learned. The Chachamim actually use that pasuk of Beit Hashem Elokecha in the opposite way than Rebbe Eliezer. Rebbe Eliezer uses it to be memayit things that are not coming into the bayit. But the Chachamim say, on the contrary, it comes to be marbe things that are only used for the bayit, which means, let's say I want to donate the golden tiles that were used in the Heichal, and I want to bring that from an Esnan Zona. I can't. So don't think that it only means a carbon. Even things that are only used for the bias itself, that's still usher as Esnan Zona u'mefir kelef, which is the exact opposite approach. Okay. The question, according to the Chachamim, I mean, there's an interesting approach of the Tosfos Yantam. The Tosfos Yantav learns that the reason that the Chachamim argue on the drasha of Beis Hashem Elokech is not because they use the pasuk for these other things and therefore they don't have it available, but rather the idea is that since the Parah Aduma actually is brought from the Trumas Halishka, so that's called Bala Bayit because the Trumas Halishka is Bala Bayit. Okay, it's an interesting approach to the Tosfos Yantav. That, of course, is how we paskin, that Esan Zena Mechir Kelev pasuls Akpara Adum. Kol HaMumim HaPoslim B'Mugdashim, the entire list of Mumim and Becheres, pasuls with the Pora Aduma, because it says Asher Ein Ba Mum. Rochavaleh, suppose somebody took a ride on the back of a Pora Aduma, or suppose he just leaned against the Pora Aduma, or suppose he was nitla biznava, some take out the word o, which makes more sense, nitla biznava ve'avar et hanahar. So it's not, I mean, holding on to a tail, how much support is that going to give you? But if you're crossing a river, then you can hold on to a tail, and that actually will help you cross the river. So that's the usage of the Pora Aduma. Or ki pela la'ata mosera, how about if the very rope that you use to lead it, you twist the rope around and you put it on around its neck or on its back, you know? Or you take off your talus and you put it on. The parah becomes pasul because this is Allah Allah-o. You put some burden on its back. And it's Asher lo Allah Allah-o. Same thing is true by the Egla Arufa. It says Asher lo Ubadba. So we have two different dinim, and we learn one from the other, because we have Gzera Shava. Remember, between Egla Arufa and Parah Aduma, we started the Masechet with that contrast of Egla and Parah, and that is in both of them, it uses the word ol. So we learn from there that just like Egla Arufa, it says Beferish or Lo Ubadba, which means any usage for any Avodah would pasul, not only things that have an ol, so too, Parah Aduma, any usage will pasul. The only difference is that the ol is posel ben b'shas avodah ben shalo b'shas avodah. Masha enken, shar avodot eno posot elo b'shat avodah. So in other words, if the ol is put on it, that posels it. other things, it has to actually do the work, not just be ready to do the work. But let's take those same cases and make a slight difference. Suppose you tied up the para, you put the rope on it in order to draw it along so that it wouldn't get lost. Or suppose you made a sandal. You know, they had those, we had that, you know, when we were talking about running away in a sandal of an animal or drinking out of the sandal of an animal. So they make a sandal and that preserves its feet. Suppose you made a sandal that it shouldn't slip and get hurt. Or you put your talus over it to protect it from flies. In all of those cases, it's kosher because ze'aklau, kosher hu'letzorcha, whatever was done for the benefit of the para, it doesn't matter how much it weighs. It's for the para, that's not called an ol, and that's not called ubad, that's kosher. But if you put it on for even the slightest other issue, such as holding on to its tail, that would be pasul. And actually, we learn from here that if it's lo tzorcha, ule tzorcha, that's the chiddush. Because otherwise, it's part, what is it adding? The chiddush is that even if what you were doing is useful for the para, but you had in mind that you're doing it for yourself, then you also pasul it. Perek beis mishnah dalet besechet para. Suppose a bird settles down on the para's back. That's kosher. And why is it kosher? So that's one of the dinim that we learn out from the Egla Rufa. From the Egla Rufa, remember we have that beautiful diak in the pasuk. We talked about ki yutan mayim alzera, which is written as ki yiten mayim alzera. So what did we do with that? We said the Torah uses a kri and a ksiv to tell me that the ki yutan has to be similar to ki yiten. Just like if it's ki yiten, it's with the das of the person who wants to put it there. So to ki yutan, in which he didn't do it himself, it was passive, but it has to be done with dato. So fascinating. We have exactly the same diuk with the same exact grammar diuk. It says over there, and we pronounce it asher lo ubad ba, which is yutan, right? Asher lo ubad. But it's written without the vav. So therefore, it actually, you would read it as, avad, asher lo avad ba. So we make the same diuk. Just like to be avad would mean you would do it yourself. Af ubad, where it is passive, but nonetheless, it's only if it's your rotzen. But something that was done, shalol rotzen abalim, that does not pasul. But suppose it's mounted by a male to get it pregnant. So then that would be psula, because since it may be that the guy would say, hey, get off of my para, because it's going to be pasul, it's going to cost me $1 million. What do I need a pregnant para and lose $1 million for? So you could say that that's not considered to be something that is l'rotzen abalim. But since this is the norm in terms of rotzen abalim, you could say that in this particular case, he doesn't want it to get pregnant, but normally every balim would like their animals to be mounted. So since that's the norm, it would be considered to be for paraduma l'rotzen. Okay, that's how some explain it. Others learn that it's a gzeira. Because if we're going to allow a para to be kosher, so what's going to happen? So then that means the bialim wants it, because now it'll stay kosher, and now maybe he'll even get some baby paras out of the deal. But if that would be true, then the bialim would actually want the para to be mounted. But if the para he wants it, so then it would be pasul. So sort of allowing it would be ipso facto the reason not to allow it. It's a very cute kind of understanding. Rabbi Yudaimer, im he'elohu. Now, wait a minute. If the balim brings the male to mount onto the para, so then, of course, it's pasul. But if the male just went and mounted on his own, im me'atzmo, then it's kosher. Okay, the question is, what does he mean, he'elohu? Does he mean he'elohu by putting it into the same place? So that would be enough to be considered anything that is l'dayte. But others learn it means dafka. If he himself actually actively was involved in seeing to it that the animal would mount the part. Okay, but this is a machlokas. It's based on how to understand Reb Yehuda. Remember, Reb Yehuda's shita all over is that only in a case where the Bialim does something that shows with a maisa that it's his ratzon. And that brings us back to ki yitain and ki yutan. That's why I mentioned it earlier. Because the basis of Reb Yehuda's shita is actually about the Mishnah of hamolech chitim litron. A guy is taking chitim and he's bringing it to the grinder and it rains. So the question over there is, what happens if a guy leaves his olives up on the roof and it rains? So over there, Reb Yehuda's shita is that even though when he put it up there, he wanted it to get wet. And according to the Chachamim, that's considered to be ki'itain, meaning ki'utan dum yada ki'itain. Rabbi Yehuda Shita is that unless you do a maisa, so let's say he would go and he would turn around the zeitim, it was ofakbo, to make sure that everything would get wet. Then it would be ki'utan dum yada ki'itain. But just because he left it up there for getting wet, that's not the same, because he didn't do a maisa to show his machshava. So then the same thing would be true over here. If you didn't do something actively to show your machshava, then even though you were necha that the animal should be mounted, it still would not be considered to be, according to him, osir. So you see, mamish, the whole sugya is exactly the same. Ubad, avad, yutan, itain. Mishnah hey, perek beis. Hayu pashte sa'arot shechorot. Olivonot, suppose there were just two hairs that were black or that were white, betoch guma achat, and they were all inside one pore, one follicle. It's not really possible, one follicle, but so it would be one guma. It's possible, because it says tamima. It has to be tamima bad mimut. Maybe it means tamima, that it shouldn't have a mum. It can't mean that, because it says tamima and it also says asher ein ba mum. So obviously, those are two different issues. So the asher ein ba mum is an in mumen. But tamima means aduma tamima. It needs in its admimut to be tamima, which is a different halacha. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu betoch kos echad. Just a question of how exactly to understand this. So the Gra understands kos echad means that the hairs on an animal grow in whorls. And it doesn't mean inside one guma. But if you have two black hairs or two white hairs that are close enough that they grow in one of those patterns, like a whorl of hair, that is close enough to postulate. And the question is, if it's all based on this girsa. The question is whether this is the right girsa. Others have the girsa of Reb Yehuda Omer betoch kos echad, not afilu betoch kos echad, which means that Reb Yehuda is saying, don't read that as a guma. The correct way to say it is the kos. That's the way he was mekabelit from his Rebbe. That's how the Bartanura learns. Okay. What about if you have two hairs that are black or two hairs that are white, but they are not in the same whorl or they're not in the same guma, if you learn that kos is just a synonym, but they are mochichot zo et ze. They basically are mechazik one of the other, because of they're close enough to each other, one brings attention to the other one, and it looks like one big area of blackness, so then the kapara is possible. Rabbi Akiva says, you should know that the opposite is also true. I don't care how many, it could be four, there could be five hairs, but if they are so spread out, that they don't draw attention, and they don't see it from afar that there's black. So what you can do is, you can be tolish them. Cut them off, and then the bara will be kosher. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, you can always be makshir. Even if there's 50 of them, you'd still be able to be telish them and be makshir. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Besera Omer, afilu achat birosha, v'achat biznava, forget about all of this stuff of betoch guma achas, betoch kos achat, being mochichot zu azu. Even if you've got one on its head and one on its tail, it would also be pasul. It's the shear is two, and it makes no difference where they are. Okay, we don't pasul like that, but nonetheless, you can be fixing it according to the way we pasul it. Hoyu b'shtei sarot, but what about if you do have shtei sarot that are b'kosechot or are b'guma achas, but when you look closely, what you see is that they're turning black when they're coming out of the follicle, but the part that is visible on top is still red. So like this is a hair that is turning white. It's still black on top, so to speak, on a human. So over here, this is a red hair that is turning black or turning white. So it's two colors or vice versa. If the top part is black and the ikar is being ma'adim, so then hakol holech achar hanir'eh. What defines the kashrus of the pora is not what the sa'ar is at this point as it's coming out of the guma, but rather what color it has turned on the surface. So says Rabbi Meir. The Chachomim say, on the contrary, hakol holech achar ha'ikar, so that if it's red on its base, then it would be sufficient to be called a sa'ar adom. But this is only, as it turns out in the sugya, it's only if it's long enough. The red part itself is long enough to be considered to be a sa'ar, which means it needs to be long enough to be flipped on itself and put the top part that's red down to the root, which is red. And it's only if you cut off the black part, which is the visible part. At that point, we would say, according to the Chachamim, that the parah would be kosher. You'll ask, how can you be gozes? Isn't there an iser of giza on behemoths of kachim? So since over here, it's only a parah, which means it's only kachim berek abayit, so even though normally behemoths on berek abayit, the chachomim were gozer iser giza, they were not gozer here because they wanted to be able to be matir the parah. But if you didn't take off the black, or if you don't have a long enough hair that you could actually flip it over, even the Chachamim would be made that the parah is pasul. So says the Rambam.